All right, so we always think of a contract as like, the final word, right? Like it's written down black and white, that's it. But what happens when like the way things are usually done in a specific industry kind of suggests something different?
Right.
And that's what we're really going to dig into today, that kind of friction between what's on paper versus like the unwritten rules of the game,
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And I think for our listeners, especially those who are trying to really get a handle on contract law, in an efficient way,
Right.
this is kind of a crash course on like a crucial idea,
Yeah.
which is that industry norms, they can help sometimes to fill in the gaps in a contract.
Right.
But courts are really hesitant to let them completely contradict what's clearly written down, especially if those terms are like really important, fundamental to the whole deal.
Exactly. And to illustrate this, we're going to be diving into this case, Southern Concrete Services versus Mableton Contractors. So imagine this, right? You have a concrete supplier who's contracted to deliver this massive amount of concrete, like approximately 70,000 cubic yards.
Wow.
But then the buyer ends up only needing and ordering a fraction of that, something like 12,000 cubic yards.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the question is, can a long-standing trade custom, like the way things are usually done in the concrete business, can that actually override what seems to be, pretty clear in the contract?
Yeah, it was approximately like this massive loophole,
Right.
or was that 70,000 cubic yards a real commitment that Mableton, had to stick to in some way, closer to that number?
Exactly. So that's what we're going to unpack,
Yeah.
how the court looked at this.
Great.
So let's get into the specifics of this whole situation.
Yeah, let's do it.
So way back in 1972, we have Southern Concrete Services and Mableton Contractors. They make this agreement for supplying concrete for this big power plant project in Georgia.
Yeah.
And the key points are laid out right. It's for approximately 70,000 cubic yards of concrete at a set price, $19.60 per cubic yard. And there's a delivery time frame from September 72 to June 73. So on the surface, it seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it does seem that way, right? Like you've got the quantity, you've got the price, you've got the time.
Yeah.
What could go wrong? But there's something really important here right from the get-go.
Yeah.
This contract had something called an integration clause.
Okay.
And the contract actually said this specifically: no conditions which are not incorporated in this contract will be recognized.
Wow.
So for you listening out there, especially if you're ever, dealing with contracts, negotiating them,
Right.
pay attention to clauses like this. They can have a huge impact down the line.
Absolutely.
It's like the contract saying, hey, what you see is what you get. Nothing outside of this matters. So why is this a big deal in a case like this? Well, it makes it harder to say, oh, but there's this trade custom that changes things.
Right, because you've got that clause that's basically saying, nope, this document is it.
Exactly. It's like the contract's own little force field.
I like that. I like that. A force field protecting it.
Yeah.
All right, so Southern Concrete's getting ready for this huge order, right?
Yeah.
They're probably thinking, okay, 70,000 cubic yards, we got to get things rolling.
Right. Gearing up.
But then Mableton only ends up ordering about 12,500 cubic yards,
Oh, wow.
which is barely, 18% of that initial approximately 70,000.
Yeah, that's a huge difference.
It is, and you can imagine Southern Concrete's not too thrilled, right?
No, I wouldn't be either. They probably invested money, got production going based on that larger number.
Exactly. It's
Yeah.
thinking we had this whole plan based on this agreement.
Right.
So as a result, Southern Concrete sued Mableton for breach of contract. And they weren't just looking for payment for the concrete they actually delivered.
Yeah.
They were trying to recover the profit they would have made on that remaining, 57,000 plus cubic
Yeah.
yards, plus over $20,000 in costs they had already spent to get ready to fulfill the whole order.
Makes sense. They're trying to cover their losses, right? So,
Exactly.
what did Mableton say to all this?
Well, their defense was basically, hey, in the construction world, especially with concrete, the quantities we talk about are often just estimates.
Oh, okay.
And they claim there was this longstanding custom in the industry where those numbers are more like guidelines,
I see. So it's like, yeah, we put a number in the contract, but everybody knows it can change based on how the project actually goes.
Exactly. It's just how we do things in this business.
Interesting. So now we've got this battle right.
Right.
We have what seems like pretty clear language in the contract, plus that integration clause we talked about, and that's going up against these like unwritten rules of the concrete industry. So how does the law deal with this kind of conflict?
Right. So that brings us to this really important piece of the legal puzzle,
Okay.
the UCC.
The Uniform Commercial Code.
Yeah. Exactly. Specifically, Section 2202. And this section basically outlines how written contracts can be interpreted.
Okay.
And it includes a few key elements. Like it acknowledges that a written agreement can be explained or supplemented by things like, you know, prior deals between the parties or by the common practices within a specific industry.
Right. So it's recognizing that contracts don't just exist in a vacuum.
Right.
They're made within a certain context of how business is usually done.
Exactly. But, and this is a big but,
yeah,
there's this crucial limitation,
uh-huh,
that outside evidence, you know, like those past dealings or trade customs, they can't contradict what's explicitly stated in the written agreement.
Right. So there's got to be some kind of harmony between them.
Exactly. And that's where this reasonable harmony test comes into play.
Okay. The reasonable harmony test. I like that. So what does that actually mean, you know, in a courtroom?
Right. Yeah. Like, how does that play out? So essentially, it means that any evidence that comes from outside the contract, like those trade customs Mapleton was trying to bring in, it has to align with what the contract actually says and with the obligations it creates for both parties.
Okay.
You can't, like, totally undermine or go against the core of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
The court has to decide if there's a way for both the written terms and this outside evidence to work together,
right,
without one of them canceling the other out.
Got it. So it's not just about whether there's, like, a difference between them, but whether they can coexist, you know, peacefully.
Exactly. Peacefully. Okay. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So in this particular case, Mapleton was arguing that this trade custom of having flexible quantities should essentially overrule that approximately 70,000 cubic yards figure.
So they're saying in our world, everybody knows that's just an estimate.
Exactly. It's not set in stone.
Interesting.
But Southern Concrete pushed back and pointed to that integration clause we talked about and those specific numbers, you know,
right,
the quantity, the price, the time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, look, these are clear terms we both agreed to. They also pointed out a difference from another case, Columbia Nitrogen, where evidence of a trade custom actually was allowed.
Oh, okay. What was different there?
Well, in that case, the parties had a long history of doing business together.
Oh, okay.
So there was already a context for understanding their agreement.
Yeah. So, like, their past dealings kind of showed how they usually did things.
Exactly. But Southern Concrete and Mapleton, this was their first rodeo.
Gotcha. Brand new relationship. No prior history to look at.
Right. So that lack of past dealings, it's,
yes,
a big deal, right?
It is. It makes it much harder to argue that both sides, you know, implicitly understood the contract based on how they had worked together before.
Right. There's no, well, we always do it this way kind,
yeah,
of argument.
Exactly.
So when this case went to court, they had to really grapple with this tension, right?
Yeah.
The flexibility that Mapleton was claiming was customary versus the apparent certainty that Southern Concrete was banking on based on what the contract said.
Right. So it's like, okay, is this just how things are done or did they really mean what they wrote down?
Exactly. And ultimately, the court sided with Southern Concrete.
They did.
They didn't buy Mapleton's argument that trade customs should override the contract.
Interesting. So how did they justify that?
Well, the court drew a very clear line between interpreting a contract and, like, fundamentally changing its essential terms.
Okay.
They said trade customs can definitely help to clear up ambiguities, you know, or filling gaps where the contract's silent.
Right.
But they can't be used to completely rewrite or negate the main agreements that the parties made in writing.
Gotcha. So it's like using spices to enhance the flavor, not to, like, change the entire dish.
Exactly. A good analogy.
So what did they consider to be the essential terms in this particular case?
Well, for the court, the quantity that approximately 70,000 cubic yards...
Mm-hmm.
Along with the price per yard and the delivery time frame, those were the bedrock of this whole agreement.
Makes sense. Those are the things they actually negotiated and put in writing.
Exactly. And to allow a trade custom to just erase that quantity term, reduce it by over 80%.
Yeah.
The court said that went way beyond interpretation.
Right. That's a huge change, not just a little tweak.
Exactly. They were like, no, that's changing the deal altogether.
And what about that integration clause we talked about earlier?
Oh, yeah. Well, the court brought that up, too. They said it further emphasized the idea that the written document was supposed to be the complete and only expression of their agreement.
So they were really serious about sticking to what was on the page.
Exactly. And there was this one quote from the court's reasoning that I found really powerful.
Oh, yeah. What was that?
They said, "A construction which negates express terms by allowing unilateral abandonment is patently unreasonable."
Wow. So they're basically saying one side can't just abandon their core obligations and say, oh, but that's how we do things in this industry.
Exactly.
It really underscores how important they saw that written agreement to be.
It does. And it highlights how the UCC while it tries to reflect the realities of the business world, it also really values the sanctity of written contracts.
Yeah. Right. People need to be able to trust the deals they make. So this case is fascinating, but what are like the bigger implications of this decision for contract law as a whole? What's the takeaway here?
Yeah. What's the lesson?
Mm-hmm.
So this case really highlights when integration clauses carry a lot of weight, especially when they're combined with those very specific essential terms like the quantity, the price, the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it really clarifies the difference between using trade customs to fill in genuine gaps where something's not spelled out in the contract.
Right, which is often okay.
Exactly. Versus using them to replace or contradict those clear terms that are written down.
Which is usually a no-go.
Right, and that's not okay. And it's helpful to think of it as like gap filling versus term replacement.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I like that.
So customs can help you understand the finer points of a deal where something's not explicitly stated.
Right.
But they can't be used to dismantle the fundamental parts of the contract itself.
Exactly. And for our listeners, especially you law students out there, there's a very practical takeaway here. When you're drafting contracts and you need some wiggle room in certain terms, you know, especially crucial ones like quantity.
Right.
Build that flexibility directly into the contract itself.
Okay.
Include clauses that allow for adjustments based on specific agreed upon conditions rather than relying on, you know, maybe conflicting or unclear industry norms.
So instead of just saying approximately,
right,
it's better to have a clause that says something like, the quantity may vary based on the buyer's actual needs, but not by more than 20% or something like that.
Exactly. That way everyone knows what the potential for change is.
Right. It's all spelled out.
It's clear and there are no surprises.
So to sum it all up, what's the key takeaway from Southern Concrete versus Mapleton?
The main lesson here is that when you've got a contract with clear essential terms like quantity, price, delivery, time frame, and especially when there's a strong integration clause, courts are very unlikely to let trade customs come in and contradict those terms.
Right.
Especially if those customs would totally undermine the written agreement.
Yeah.
Specificity in contracts usually wins over general industry practices when those practices are trying to negate what was agreed upon in writing.
And that reasonable harmony test that's so important.
It is.
It's not just about whether there's a difference between the contract and the custom, but whether that custom can coexist with the contract's language and its obligations without, you know, destroying its fundamental meaning.
Right.
In this case, that 82% reduction in quantity that wasn't seen as a minor tweak, the court saw that as basically abandoning the core of the contract.
Yeah, that massive difference really shows the critical distinction between a reasonable interpretation or, you know, adding to contractual terms and completely overhauling what was agreed upon.
This case really provides an aha moment for how contracts are interpreted in the real world. You know, going beyond just the words on the page to consider the context, but with very clear boundaries on how far that contextual interpretation can go.
Absolutely. And for those of you listening who are law students, remember this case as a clear example of how important it is to have precise and unambiguous drafting, especially when it comes to those essential terms that define the heart of the agreement. Mm-hmm. If you think you'll need some flexibility later, make sure you build that into the agreement itself. Don't just hope that a judge will agree that an industry custom should overrule what's clearly written down.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Southern Concrete versus Mapleton, let's think about some of the broader implications for contract law.
Okay, yeah.
How does a case like this shape the balance between upholding what's written in contracts and acknowledging the practical realities of the business world where those contracts are made?
Hmm.
What happens when established industries have these deeply ingrained customs that are very different from, you know, standard contract templates?
Right. Like what happens when the way things are usually done clashes with what's on paper?
Exactly. It makes you think about all the different layers of understanding that go into any business deal and where the law ultimately draws that line between what's written down and those unwritten rules of the game.
It's a fascinating question.
It really is, and that's something to ponder as you continue your journey in the world of contract law.
Definitely lots to think about.
Yeah, absolutely.